The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Locher. I'm your host today for The Trumpet Daily. I'm assisted by Parker and Justice as our producers and appreciate their time. I'd like to thank those that are listening, whether you're doing so through CRN Talk Radio or if you're doing over the air here in the local area, perhaps you're listening online. Or as we remind you time to time, you can always watch the video podcast playback at a time that's more convenient for you. I was trying to find the contract with CRN. I think we've been there now for about 9 months, and we're just really happy they've helped us build our audience. And we hope that the audience is growing constantly. There's indications that it is. So we're very thankful to you for that. And again, there's a number of other programs we make available on the trumpet.com website, or you can go to kpcg.fm. either one of those websites and listen to Trumpet Hour. We have a whole wealth of different programs there that you might find quite interesting and very helpful. It is our intention to cover with you fulfilled prophecies to help you relate what the Bible says to what's taking place in the world around you. And looking back in history, looking back at fulfilled prophecy, that is really beneficial. But what's more important is to look forward. And the Bible tells us what to watch, to be future-minded and to let that guide our conduct, the way we study, the way we live our lives. We have this programming here to help us avoid the noise. That's a phrase I picked up from Mr. Joel Hilliker. And it's really a meaningful statement to make, to avoid the noise. Satan, as we know, is a master counterfeiter. And he's, whether it be in other conservative programs, he'd like to distract us. And of course, there's really just a very strong direction to our programming. The direction is to keep you focused on what's most important. And so we encourage you to avoid the noise. I was thinking about the prophet Daniel the other day, and just reading through his book. And it's kind of interesting to look at the life of a young man that matures with time, had a lot of responsibility in an administrative function, in a political setting. And yet he was also very close to God. His faith was tested time to time. Really a very impressive individual to study. And I got thinking about the visions that he saw, or the revelation that God gave to him. And it would have been very unusual to him to see what we experience today, modern weaponry, to go through history as quickly as he did, to watch civilizations build and decline, to just take in all that God had to show him. Another thought that crossed my mind with that is, in a sense, he had very little context, I would presume. There is a lot of meaning to carry across through the visions that he received. And so here he had little context. And you think about the troubled world in which we live and how confusing that would be to somebody to see the again, we often think of military advancements, the weaponry. But if you think about coronavirus, he'd see individuals in perhaps lab coats in a hospital setting, very different. And yet in some ways, too, very similar perhaps to the magicians, the medical professionals in his day, that they were held somewhat as a divinity or some type of religious context with the medicine and the science that existed at the time that he lived. God gave a very important prophecy to Daniel that we use today to better understand who the Antiochus is. We have booklets, the Daniel Unsealed at Last, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, America Under Attack, Great Again. You could go through a lot of different booklets in our library to learn more about Antiochus. And as Daniel was receiving that revelation from God, he made this statement after getting the revelation about Antiochus. This is from chapter 7 and verse 28 of Daniel's prophecy. He said, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." Cogitations is another word for, say, meditation, or the things that he saw. And as he said, he watched all of this unfold. It was perhaps a little difficult to understand. He was writing down notes. He was listening to God for explanation. And as he thought about all of this, it troubled him. Just as it troubles us today, I think, to live through these times, he was troubled. It changed his countenance, his appearance, and yet he kept it internalized. He recorded as God said or commanded him to do. He shared, of course, when God had him share with Nebuchadnezzar or other individuals. Of course, he shared that revelation with them, but it was troubling. Part of his vision that he saw in Daniel chapter 7, he made the association with the saints of God and how they were wearing out. It's because of a daily war, a daily struggle with Satan, the devil, as it turns out. And yet that troubled him as well, to watch those that were faithful to God starting to lose some of their fight. God really needs us to stay in the fight all the way through the end of the war. At the end of the book of Daniel, he makes another statement, and he reminds us there that all of these prophecies are for our benefit today. What he saw applied historically, but the most important revelation, the very value of the prophecy relates to this end time. He said in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, says, "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." I remember studying this prophecy years ago and just thinking about it and relating it to the pace of technology, the advancements in science, the advancements in medicine. The coronavirus vaccine that they're using today is modified DNA. It's pretty sophisticated, the science and the medicine that we experience on a daily basis now. Hopefully we're not taking that. Hopefully we don't have to take that. We've chosen not to. But as Daniel said, there'd be this explosion of knowledge. There'd be this development with technology. Science would be behind that. And you'd see this progress ever increasing. Now, some of that progress, some of the science is really beneficial. It's really inspiring. But they're often ignored in this end time. And I'll mention more about that in a moment. Now, I was just thinking today, just looking back in time, how often in my past decades of my life, how often there was this call to really fix yourself to science, to medicine, to trust technology. You start hearing words like faith, trust. These are religious words. We're talking about a religion. It's religious talk. Your host, your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, makes that point frequently, that what we're going through today is a religious endeavor to try to coax society in one direction or another. Religion's obviously very effective to do so. It taps into one's emotions. But the value of our programming, the value of our message, if you're familiar with it, we always point you back to the Bible. There is a source that we encourage you to trust, and it's God's word. We don't ask you to just trust the science blindly or to listen to a man. The Bible warns against that as well. And yet, if you look at this false religion that's out there that we're confronting day by day, this religion of science and medicine, they do expect blind faith. They do expect trust. There is no source that's stable. It's pretty obvious as we move through the troubles that we're facing. I mean, it's cloaked as science. It's cloaked as protection for us. Seldom do they talk about it as religion, and yet that's really exactly what it is if you stop to think about it. So Paul told Timothy that in the end time, that there would be just people always learning, but never able to come to the truth, to the knowledge of the truth. That's a really horrifying statement to make. That's another description of our end time, isn't it? that there's this surge of learning, an advancement in technology that's really hard to believe, but yet never really learning what we need to learn. Now, getting back to my example of positive developments with science, with technology, we've heard a lot about the James Webb launch that Mr. Stephen Fleury spoke about even on yesterday's Trumpet Daily program. So inspiring to witness the launch of that incredible piece of technology. He mentioned that the James Webb is a cooperative international effort. You see and hear different languages or dialects spoken. You see the symbols of different countries that were involved in the project, namely the Europeans, the Americans, Canadians had some influence on the James Webb telescope. And Mr. Fleury yesterday suggested that maybe it could help bring nations together. Maybe science and technology would help unite us around a positive common front. Maybe it would get some positive news coverage. It's interesting. I knew the launch was on Saturday, and I was eager to get up and watch it. I wanted to watch it. I also had a few other things to get done on Saturday morning. So when I finally got to check the news, I just wanted a quick answer first before I watched a long video. I just wanted to go to mainstream media and see, well, did it launch successfully or not? This is just really honestly about an hour after the liftoff had occurred. And I didn't find anything. I went to various news sources, mainstream media, some conservative sites, and I didn't find any reference to the launch, not at least toward the very top of their page. And so my first thought was, okay, it's been delayed again. It's been delayed hundreds of times probably over the last couple years. And so I thought, well, maybe something came up at the last minute and delayed the launch. So I decided to go to NASA's webpage. I went there, and lo and behold, the launch was successful. It went to space. Sadly, for so many news sources, perhaps one of the greatest stories of the year, something positive, something to get us excited about what we're going to see in the future. You think that would make some news, that it would get some front page coverage, but sadly it didn't. It's really tragic. And the news that did make the headlines, which they're just responding to what the public wants, right? Their news headlines were about political nonsense, about innuendos, and this person said this, so it meant this, and it hurt their party and their reputation. And sometimes you read the context or just the actual statement by a politician, and it depends on which side of the media you're listening to. They can really make it sound extreme. Sometimes I have to go back there and say, now, is that what that really meant, or are they just blowing this out of proportion? Nonetheless, so tragic that the news that was covered was about politicians. There is some celebrity news in there, of course. You got to have that toward the top of the page. It was on the holiday, Christmas holiday, and so, of course, there were stories about that. And even there, the stories that came up in relation to the holiday season, most of the stories were about violent murders, death, overspending, not exactly positive news, not exactly what you'd want to hear on a supposed day of celebration, a day that's supposed to be tied back to Christ, and yet really so few references. So I was looking to see, well, you know, how many rocket launches were there, because maybe this will explain why there wasn't that much coverage. So one source that I found, it said that there have been 143 rocket launches this year. 9 of them failed, so it exploded on liftoff, but 134 launches were successful. And I think maybe giving the mainstream media benefit of the doubt, maybe it's because there are so many rocket launches, 134 successful ones, that maybe they thought, well, this isn't really newsworthy. And yet this is another example, I think, of Satan getting in there and creating some noise. Well, there were a lot of other rocket launches. There was a lot going on that day in the public. It was people's day off. There are so many distractions, and yet something so potentially inspiring takes place, and it's simply overlooked. As was brought out yesterday, we need to set our minds on the things above. God declares his greatness before us every day in the natural world that we behold, and then we launch these tremendous pieces of technology, and it's really an achievement for mankind to be so successful to build a project like this. International support, people all over the world. What a great achievement. What a great achievement. And it shows what we can do. It does give us better eyesight to look at those things that God has created, and it's lost. You might recall a few months ago, I gave a Trumpet Daily, and I suggested that there was a potential that the James Webb wouldn't make it to its orbital slot. It's not there yet, but things are looking very positive. And it's funny because I was talking to Mr. Hilliker about that. He hosts the Trumpet Hour. And I told him, I suggested that maybe something could go wrong. I think it really offended him because he's so positive. He's so optimistic. He wants to see those images. And I think we all do. And my suggestion back then that maybe it could have some difficulty in launch and reaching orbit was the fact that what it will show us might just be too much for mankind, too beautiful, too positive. I really hope that I'm wrong, and I think I am wrong. Just listening to Mr. Hilliker talk about it, reading about what he's written about it, I do think it will give us something very positive in these dark days to give us hope about our future. Now, there's a lot of other things going on in this crazy world around us. We know that God said it's going to be filled with vanity and trouble and human anguish, a lot of carnality, a lot of confusion. Sam Livingston, one of our producers, sent me an email this morning, and he's quoting from the Centers of Disease Control, the CDC, and they had a news release on December 27th. They said, and I quote, "Given what we currently know about COVID-19 and the Omicron variant, CDC is shortening the recommended time for isolation from 10 days for people with COVID-19 to 5 days. If asymptomatic, followed by 5 days of wearing a mask when around others. The change is motivated by science, demonstrating that the majority of SARS-CoV-2 transmission occurs early in the course of an illness, generally in the first day or two prior to onset of symptoms and the 2 or 3 days after." And I could carry on with it. So here's something interesting to think about. And I know you've heard it before. We've talked about it. You heard it in the feature story news today. We're preparing for more tight lockdowns, more restrictions on what you can do and can't do, whether you're vaxxed or unvaxxed. All of this threat, all of this catastrophe that's just waiting for us. We've been talking about Omicron for close to 3 weeks now, if I remember correctly. And the prognostications were awful. It was going to set us back, could be worse than before. You know, hospitals are already at max capacity. All of this gloom and doom. And so we need to shut everything down. We need to start these mandates and really prevent the spread of Omicron. And yet, if you look at the actions, if you just think about what's taken place, if it's so deadly, why are we shortening the time that you're supposed to be in isolation? Why? Why? If they saw it coming and they saw how awful it was going to be. I mean, they told us, they scared the entire world. This is going to be terrible. And so you start thinking about lockdowns and new legislation and mandates and all of that that has to come into play. That should have happened weeks ago. And it was set to happen weeks ago. But then maybe somebody thought, wait a minute, if we shut down the economy before this time of spending, it could be devastating. The email that Mr. Livingston sent to me, there was a tweet from somebody else. I didn't know who the other person is. But he drew attention to the fact that 6 days prior to this CDC decision, the chief executive officer from Delta Airlines suggested to the government that they make this change, that they requested the quarantine period for COVID infections be cut in half to 5 days. It's in a public letter that they sent in to, it was sent to the director of the CDC. And so could it be that Delta Airlines influenced the policy? The airlines are struggling now. I mean, they're really in the news. And of course it's blamed on weather and it's blamed on people having the flu. I'm sure it has nothing to do with staff that they laid off with their mandates. I'm sure none of that comes into play. I just honestly feel personally that there's hardly anything you can trust when it comes to these mandates and the changes. So if it was so terrifying, why wait for a month? Why wait till we get just past the spending time, then we're gonna lock it all down? It seems to me so illogical, right? Wouldn't you wanna stop it before it expanded, before it migrated all around the world like it has? The time to stop it was weeks ago. To respond to it now, if anything, in science, it's a knee-jerk reaction. That's a horribly late decision. Horribly late. You know, consumer spending in the United States accounts for 70% of our economic activity. 70% of the GDP is tied to consumer spending. And I don't have the stats to rattle off to you, but you know as well as I do the amount of consumer spending this time of year for the holidays. You see, it doesn't make financial sense to shut down now. And then maybe we can shut things down when people need to work to pay off their purchases, but now they're going to be locked out of work, perhaps. It's just illogical. It's a science and a medicine. It's a false god that doesn't make any sense. There's no support for their actions. So science and medicine, we're going to watch a few clips here in just a moment of an interview that Mark Levin did with Dr. Risch. And it's their interaction, they kind of explain the power behind science, medicine, and big pharma. And then they also talked in this interview, they reflected on the role of academia. And Mark Levin pointed out that, well, you kind of sense an absence of academia. And the doctor corrected him, said, oh no, there's no absence of academia. You just have to support the CDC's position. Then there's all kinds of support. They love external support, but it's not open dialogue. It's not fair science. We all know that's true. So this Dr. Risch fella, he talked about the bias that the Biden administration has brought into this scientific equation. And really, it prevents people from making logical choices. We're basically told, do it. Trust the science. Believe the science. You're going to kill everybody on the planet if you don't trust the science. Trust the science. Trust the science. And then we watch them flop their science, as we know. Dr. Fauci, how many times has he changed course? How many times have we change deadlines? You've seen the montages here on this program. You see it in mainstream media more frequently now. We are in big trouble, really. So Mark Levin, he's a radio personality. He also has a segment that he produces for Fox News. I forgot that he also was part of the President Ronald Reagan's administrative staff. He was the chief of staff for Attorney General Edwin Meese. I just pulled up a few details about him. So he's a pretty involved individual. He's been involved at the upper echelons of government. He has a pretty good understanding, I would presume, of how things work. And so he interviews Dr. Harvey Risch. And Dr. Risch is an epidemiology professor at Yale University. He's a well-respected, well-known epidemiologist. And he's ready to give, I think, some quality input, some logical input. I'm sure he could get very scientific or convoluted with the terminology, but he speaks pretty plainly. He represents a voice that's in conflict, though, with the Biden administration. So he struggles to reach the airwaves. He was also part of the New York City Police Department's the police officers that were against the jab mandate. He tried to support them. So anyway, I want to play several clips from his interview. This dates back to October 24th, 2021. Let's get right into this. Clip one, please.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, announced in accordance with the Biden administration that they're going to ramp up efforts as soon as they can to vaccinate 5 to 11-year-olds as soon as the FDA gives them an emergency use approval. Does the science support this kind of activity, sir?
Well, this is a risk-benefit analysis, And from what I understand, the adverse events occurring from COVID itself in 5 to 11-year-olds are so infrequent that the hazards from the vaccines are likely to be greater than the hazards from the illness. And so the benefit is against vaccination for almost all of that age group, except for children with chronic conditions like obesity, diabetes, asthma, respiratory diseases. There you have more of an equation to balance.
So first of all, I think I gave you the wrong date. That was obviously just from yesterday, this interview. So I apologize for the wrong date there. But it's interesting to listen to some of these answers. Emergency approval. We've got to act now to put this useless vaccination into children, this dangerous vaccination into children. As he said, if you just look at it, there's no way you could justify the potential risk when you look at the difficulties that COVID presents to children in that age group. It's almost nil. There's very little risk to them. There's an incredible percentage of survival and just doing fine with it. It's like a common cold to some, and yet there's this emergency push to create this risk. And as the doctor pointed out at the end, what about some of the chronic issues? Why don't we address some of that? Chronic diabetes in youth, or some of these other issues that present comorbidities that do increase the potential or the risk if COVID does present in that individual. Let's look at some of the causes and what we can do. But there's no discussion of that. Let's go on to clip two, please.
I see these numbers from the Daily Wire. Since January 2020, fewer than 450 children between the ages of 5 and 18 have passed away from the virus, according to provisional data from the CDC. And that's amounts to between 0 and 0.03% of infected children. I would think more children probably die in a given year from the flu. Is that correct?
That has been true in the past. Don't forget that those 450, half of them were children who died with COVID, not from COVID, according to the studies that have looked at that distinction. So the numbers are as small or comparable or less than flu. Of course, we don't want them to die, and we want to treat them if right. at all possible. But those numbers are not what we deal with by vaccinating the entire population.
Like the doctor said, I mean, we want to take care of our children. We're obligated. Thankfully, it's a natural tendency. It's a desire to look over your children to protect them. And so you think that we would want to really consider the risk of giving them an experimental medication. But it's a God. It's something that we just need to trust, have blind faith, and yet it's your children. And then you listen to those numbers, so small. Again, every child is precious. That goes without saying. If there were, 5 million deaths or sicknesses among that age group, you would probably think a little bit differently. But if you're looking at maybe 200 and your reaction to that is to experiment with all children, and you know the authority of the government and the pressure that's going to put on parents that need their children in daycare, need their children in schools, and the pressure that's going to be leveled against those parents to jab their children is really inhuman. How many are dying with the virus? How many children suffer the flu? How many children die from complications of diabetes or heart disease or asthma? And yet if they find COVID in there, well, we'll just excuse some of those chronic issues. It's just criminal. We'll move on here. Clip three, please.
So why do you think there is this move and almost obsession with vaccinating little kids?
I really don't understand the mindset of government officials who think that noble lying, so-called noble lying to the population, is a valid approach to governance and public health.
Just think about what he said. I don't think noble lying is a valid approach of the government to the population. How is any lying acceptable? And yet to suggest today that we hold our politicians accountable, that we call them out for lying, or the mainstream media, that's not going to happen. And as he said, It's hard to explain. I looked up the derivation of noble lying. It says, in politics, a noble lie is a myth or untruth, often but not invariably, of a religious nature, knowingly propagated by an elite to maintain social harmony or to advance an agenda. The noble lie is a concept originated by Plato as described in the Republic. That's a noble lie. It has a religious nature to it. It's used by the elites to bring about their agenda. Sound familiar? I mean, what a perfect word or phrase to use when talking about this administration's agenda, about fake media and the push and the way they're using cartoons or fast food or anything they can do to incentivize children to make decisions without their parents' knowledge in some cases, definitely without their parents' approval in some cases, and yet it's propagated to save everybody, to protect the children that are just fine, thank you, without this jab. The doctor refers to the big lie, and that's what it is. You tell a lie often enough, people start to believe it. You know as well as I do that you would get the same talk back, the same feedback from parents out there in the world that they've just believed, well, I've got to do this right away. I need my child jabbed instantly to protect my child. Where is the big lie coming from? How could you be so inhumane to perhaps put profits above lives of little children or older Americans that perhaps fought for this country in war? Or a middle-aged person that just contributes to consumer spending to keep the country going, that perhaps voted for you as a politician. How awful that is. Let's go to clip four, please.
And the media don't seem to press them. The Biden administration is pushing this. I mean, there's going to be parents who push back. They're going to create more conflict. That is the Biden administration. We now have mandates in this country. Where people are told you either get a vaccine or you're going to lose your job. And even if you've had the virus and you have natural immunity, you have the antibodies, they're telling people you're fired. Cops, nurses, doctors, firefighters, employees all over the country. Does the science support that?
No, the science, there's more than 90 studies already showing that natural immunity, post-infection natural immunity, is as strong or stronger and better and longer lasting than vaccine immunity. So there's no question that people who've already had COVID have no need to be vaccinated for the public health. Could they benefit from the vaccination? Perhaps a little, but the hazards of those people getting the vaccine are higher than an average person in the population getting the vaccine. There are 6 studies that show that increased risk. So there's no real reason for that they need to be vaccinated, and certainly no reason for a mandate to have them vaccinated. And the fact that we're facing such a calamitous big lie over that they need to be vaccinated because their previous immunity, natural immunity, doesn't work, it's just a big lie, and you have to address where that big lie is coming from.
Where is it coming from? I wish the good doctor there had a little more emotion. I wish there was a bigger audience for Mark Levin. We're trying. Some media sources are trying to just point out the obvious. The science is wrong. It's proven wrong. And they're pushing an agenda. So many examples of them being wrong. You can watch on this show, you can see it in other media sources again, these montages that show what they say today, and then 2 days later, it's something else, or sometime later, it's something else. Why aren't they being held accountable? One more clip here, clip five.
This has to be one of the worst year and a half, 2 year periods of information provided to the American people by the so-called scientific and medical community that I can ever remember.
Well, as far as I can tell, that it's a top-down structure, and most doctors do not get their information by going back and reading the original studies and making up their own minds. They get fed the information from pharma reps or from what they're told from societies, and the conflicts are legion, and so it's no surprise that most doctors don't pay attention and think what they're told.
Yeah, it's what do you say? So many lies. What a terrible year. I mean, you can document, you could tie it back to this administration if you want, and you probably should. You can look at science. You can look at scientists that have worked their whole lives studying pandemics, preparing for pandemics, and they're not going to let a crisis escape them. I mean, it brings them to the spotlight. This highlights their life's work, and it reinforces, look at what technology can do. Look at what we could do for ourselves. And honestly, the answer is it's a little early, isn't it? If you were to just look at science, they got ahead of themselves. They're creating all of this risk. And we've documented almost daily on this program the risks that are hidden. They are reported on government websites. You don't ever hear about the risk or the adverse reaction. You just don't ever hear about it. It's starting to be more commonplace for athletes to suffer these adverse reactions, sometimes death. It's starting to happen more and more. It's going to be harder and harder to hide. Such a deceitful agenda. Such a catastrophic false religion. It's just absolutely unthinkable. We're going to take a break here in just a moment, but before we get there, I want to give the guys a clue here. We're skipping ahead a bit. I got an email from Epoch Times, and I'll just read this to you. I got this email about 3 hours ago. They said, at the Epoch Times, we reported on all the vaccine successes from all the pharmaceutical companies that came out with them. But unlike some other media, we did not fail to report instances in which the problems arose. Here are some links to stories that you probably never saw in legacy or mainstream media. So here's some of their articles, their premium articles. The first one here, healthcare workers speak out on why they would rather lose their jobs than take a COVID-19 vaccine. Mind you, think about who these individuals are. They have made their profession medicine, science. That's what they do for a living. And they've come out and said, well, you know what? I would rather surrender my career than to experiment with this medication. Another headline here, natural immunity longer lasting than protection from COVID-19 vaccines, according to Dr. Robert Malone. You might have read some of his material or heard that. Another article that doesn't make the widespread press, the silence of the professors. And again, if you listen to that whole interview with Mr. Levin and Dr. Risch, you can find it at Fox News. If you listen to that whole thing, he explains, again, the role of professors in academics. And it's pretty logical. They're not going to promote a contrary voice, but they sure will find those that fall in line that just believe. Another headline, CDC, COVID-19 vaccines effectiveness against hospitalizations drop. Didn't hear that. All I hear on mainstream media, if you're vaxxed, you still might get it, but you're not going to go to the hospital. And even if you do, you're not going to die like those stupid people that didn't get vaxxed. That's what I hear all the time. They're not being faithful to the facts. Another headline here, lawyers helping airline workers land religious waivers against COVID-19. There is some success, but it's hushed up. And one final headline, who's really being hospitalized? I'm going to go back and look at that article. That sounds pretty interesting. Well, we're going to take a short break here and come back and just touch on a few other news items.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, thanks for sticking with us today at The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate your feedback, as we often say, so please feel free to send in your thoughts. As usual, I over-prepared. I did want to just make a plug for the Key of David program that airs this coming weekend. If you're able to watch that or if you can stream it online, it's entitled The Times of the Gentiles. It's a program that just kind of races you through different continents, different world blocks, geopolitical systems that are going to clash. That's what the Bible teaches us. It's a great program, and Mr. Fleury explains that the rise of the Gentile powers comes at the cost of the decline of the Israelitish powers, and we know there's a cause for that. It's not just a coincidence, and in fact, the Israelite nations in this end time are to blame. We have a great book, and we refer to it all the time, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This is our most requested book. It has been for decades. If you don't have a copy, you really need to get a copy of this. You need to go back through it. This is a book of prophecy. This is a book that helps you understand all prophecies in your Bible. It's a fantastic book. You could go to thetrumpet.com and request the copy there from our literature library. You see it up on the screen there. You can download a PDF if you prefer to do that. You could call 1-866-930-3024. Talk to one of our operators. They're super friendly. They'd love to send you a copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy. So again, just watch that program if you can this coming weekend. One other headline that I wanted to get into here, this is just from PJ Media. And Mr. Richard Palmer sent this across with today's news report that he sends to the editorial department. And they said that the headline here is World Events Match the Book of Revelation. That's pretty amazing. Let me just read some of Richard's summary points. And I think he's got a quote or two in here from their publication. This is again from PJ Media. It says, in such times of general distress, societal upheaval, intellectual vacancy, worldwide plague and widespread hysteria amounting to a kind of universal madness, one is tempted to turn again to the book of Revelation with its imagery and prophetic interpretation, even if one's not a believer. They say the fit between the ancient book and the contemporary scene is too close for comfort. Is a divine prophecy about to be fulfilled? The article talks about the popularity of individuals that believe that Christ is about to return, that there's more people thinking that. And that's good. That's actually kind of what we're all about, is to help raise awareness that we have to look at our own lives to make sure we're square with God, that we're using the Bible, that we're studying and being prepared. That's what God wants us to do. Again, it's refreshing to see some other media sources out there make this connection between the prophecies of the book of Revelation and world events. I mean, they're right up there. They're pretty accurate. So I'm going to skip over some of the other things I was going to talk about. But I wanted to encourage you to think about just the nature of this work. You should be familiar with the fact that we never, never ask you for donations. We don't ask you for support. We don't engage in fundraising. We tell you all the time, and we mean it, there's no cost or obligation to you. You can request the materials. You're not going to get bombarded. You're not going to receive an invoice. There's no follow-up unless you ask for it. And so oftentimes people ask, well, how do you do that? I work in the business office. I work with broadcasting. And a lot of times, even the TV agents say, well, what's the catch? how is it that you're able to provide this high quality material? I mean, you look at some of these booklets and the magazines, if you're familiar with the hard copy, they are professional quality. You're familiar with our programming. You're familiar with the different names we mentioned of producers that help. It's a big work. It's a big work. So how does all of that get paid? You know, I think it's the TV log in the Trumpet magazine, the hard copy, or if you visit our websites, we ask that question and we answer it. How is your subscription paid? And essentially, we tell you it's paid for willingly, happily, by members of the Philadelphia Church of God, co-workers that support this mission, those that voluntarily give to this work. And we're very thankful to them. We come to this time of year, and it's really encouraging to look at the sacrifice people make. I'm not doing this to ask you to send in anything. I'm just answering the question how things are paid. It's really an interesting work that God does. The Philadelphia Church of God sponsors all the programming here on KPCG. The Philadelphia Church of God is behind the Trumpet magazine and the Key of David program. And it's a charity It's a charity that gives, lives by the giveaway. I love being part of the Philadelphia Church of God because we don't engage in fundraising. We don't go door to door. We don't invoice people. We don't surprise them or sing a sad song to them about how difficult this is. We just try to live by the words of Jesus Christ. It's more blessed to give than receive. You can read that in Acts chapter 20, verse 35. Right? Christ is recorded as having said that. Now, if you do give to charity, there are a number of watchdog groups out there that help monitor charities. They do so in the public interest to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of. And it's really a great source to consider if there's a new charity that you think you might support. These websites can really expose fraudulent charities. I have a 2019 Consumer Report article that talks about some of the criteria that these watchdog groups use in measuring, well, how honest and effective are these charities? And I would say, if I was to summarize this Consumer Report article, the things that they really look for are costs that are associated with fundraising and overhead. And that makes sense, right? You want to know, well, if you give a dollar to this charity, how much of that dollar is going to pay an executive salary or, you know, pay rent in a lavish property in Beverly Hills? How much is going toward fundraising? I was shocked years ago to learn that, you know, the fire department that calls and is looking for funds for the local fire department, that's probably just a telemarketing group that's been hired by the fire department to solicit funds on behalf of the fire department. And yet, in some cases, the majority of those funds never reach the fire department. Those funds are spent in fundraising activities. Let me repeat again, we do not engage in fundraising. We have no costs associated with fundraising. That saves the work hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. According to Consumer Reports, to become accredited by the Better Business Bureau, Wise Giving Alliance, charities must meet, and then they talk about several categories of oversight. But one of the financial requirements is that they spend at least 65% of their total expenses on the charitable programs and no more than 35% of total contributions on fundraising. Those are pretty generous stats or criteria to meet. Investing the majority of the money given to the charity for the charitable purposes, well, that's just kind of a given. Again, we have no fundraising expenses, so we're doing pretty well that way. I looked yesterday just at our books and to estimate administrative costs, overhead costs, I would say probably 6 or 7% of our annual expense goes to categories such as business office salaries, administrative staff salaries, utilities, insurance, legal expenses. These are all part of overhead expenditures in most categories. And if I look at salary expense for the business office, the administrators, you're talking less than 2 or 3% of the annual income. We don't have any rent. We don't have any lease payments on the corporate side of this work. We own everything. We're not in debt. We have made some really wise decisions over the years. we do rent facilities for Sabbath services or for our religious gatherings. And last year we spent $322,000 on renting halls so we could meet together and worship together. And that's really a great program too, because our congregations, you know, just like the population today, it moves around a little bit here and there. So we're not tied down to any properties that way. We could take advantage of some really good deals that are out there. And so again, we don't have rent or lease expense outside of what we do for our worship services. Utility expense. This one kind of shocked me. I thought I'd just throw it out there. We spent $245,000 so far this year on utility expenses. Heat, water, gas, electric. Very, very expensive. We spend about 3% of contributions on maintaining this campus, our equipment, the fleets that we use. I wanted to bring this up because I think this is really neat. We're very thankful to the publishing department of the Philadelphia Church of God. They work together with editorial to produce all of the materials, the printed materials that we make available to the public. In 2021, more than $2.3 million was used to support that department. And here's some costs, a little bit refined costs of the publishing department. We spent over $600,000 last year printing books and booklets and periodicals. $600,000 to print the materials that we give away for free. That's per year. Now, what's worse than that is we spent $812,000 on postage, probably about another $75,000 on just courier and freight shipping. And so you're talking about millions of dollars that are invested to give you all of these materials. Our literature request system reported to me yesterday, 687,000 pieces of literature requested this year. That does not include any of our Trumpet Magazine, Royal Vision Magazine, True Education, Watch Jerusalem. Those periodicals, we mailed out over 2.5 million printed periodicals last year. That's really inspiring to me. 17% of the annual income is devoted to creating editorial content, the books and booklets you see scrolling on the screen there. Our broadcasting department very quickly is made up of just five individuals that spend part of their time working on the broadcasts for the church. Over 90,000 people have responded in the last year. We're currently on 105 different over-the-air stations in the United States and Canada to broadcast the program. If you look at some of our cable outlets that we use, we're going to be on Comet TV, Charge TV, CW Plus. We're on the This Network. That accounts for probably, it adds another couple hundred stations. We do whatever we can to get this message out there. We have over 17.4 million views on the Trumpets video page, or can't think of the right words here, on YouTube. For thekeyofdavid.com, if you go there, trumpet.com. 17.4 million views there. Gerald Fleury has taped almost 1,000 unique Key of David programs. Yeah, these are just really staggering numbers. Last year, we spent $2.4 million just buying airtime to promote the materials that we want to give to the public for free. We are a very, very effective charity. Going back to this Consumer Reports article, this is again from November 2019. It says, Charity Watch uses a letter grade rating system that also looks at the percentage of overhead spent on programs, the cost of fundraising, and other measures of efficiency. Charities that are A rated generally spend at least 75% or more on their programs, so more of your money goes to the causes you want to support, says this analyst for Charity Watch. Now, with all their criteria mentioned, I could dogmatically say to you, the Philadelphia Church of God, the sponsor of this programming, we are an A-rated charity. Donations do go to the cause, to the programs, to developing all of this material. Really, it's a fantastic work. It's a work of giving, and we're very thankful to have this work and to share this with you. It's our great pleasure. And we encourage more requests. We encourage you to tell your friends. We're doing whatever we can to expand this work. And it's just really, it's been a tremendous year of success. We're very thankful for the growing audiences. We're thankful for the new subscribers. Again, we encourage you to browse through our materials, our resources, and just really make them go a long way. Well, I'm out of time today. I encourage you to keep listening to the Trumpet Daily. I encourage you to avoid the noise. Thank you for listening today and have a great day.